Hey everyone, what's up?
This is Chad and you are listening to Mission Daily. In today's episode, I sit down with Samir Dalakia. Samir is the CEO of Twilio SendGrid. Samir has a wide-ranging, multi-decade career in technology. He started at Stanford, and we talk about how he got into Stanford, which at first seemed way, way out of reach. And we talk about an early loss in his life. We talk about leadership lessons, culture, and a lot of really, really tough stuff. But what's fascinating about this episode is Samir is someone who prizes culture above all else. And when it comes to authenticity and vulnerability and being yourself, Samir is it. I interview a lot of CEOs, and it's rare that a CEO will be this open, this vulnerable, and is really willing to share as much as Samir did about his personal story to help inform the larger business narrative. Samir was a great guest, and you're going to enjoy today's episode. Let's jump into the show. Today's thank you for sponsorship and world-class products and services goes out to TriNet. I'm the founder of a media business, and I need all the help and organization I can get. One of the biggest problems I've faced in the past is HR. I say past because I'm not facing it anymore. I educated myself and got the team at TriNet on my side. TriNet and their expert team help us at Mission with our payroll, benefits, and compliance. TriNet offers full-service HR solutions tailored to your industry. So educate yourself and get the HR help you need. Whether your team is 10 people or 1,000, TriNet has you covered. Check out TriNet for your HR needs today. Well, Samir, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Chad. I'm excited to be joining you and your great listenership.
Right back at you. So we are in similar quarantine situations. You're down the road in Menlo. I'm here in Palo Alto, but that's not going to stop us from having an awesome conversation to hear about your journey and your story building SendGrid. So first of all, for everybody that doesn't know what SendGrid is or who you are, I would love for you to introduce yourself and tell us about SendGrid.
Yeah, terrific. Thank you. Twilio SendGrid is a cloud-based email platform that delivers automated and personalized communications to end users. And the easiest way to provide examples of this so that people can internalize it or visualize it is like when you go to a website and you click on a button that says, "I forgot my password." You know, there's code that sits behind that button to trigger a message that gets delivered in, often into your email inbox. Or if you click on the buy button on an e-commerce website, there's code that sits behind that button that sends a order confirmation or a receipt. The delivery of email at scale is actually quite complicated. And so there are a lot of companies out there that will effectively embed Twilio SendGrid's API in their code. And we just take care of the email delivery on their behalf. To give you, we've been doing this since the company was founded in 2009. So it's over a decade old now. But to give you a sense of scale, we do this, we provide that service that I just described to over 100,000 paying customers around the world. We send an email into the inbox of over 4 billion unique email recipients every quarter. So the scale of the platform is remarkable. I'm sure, Chad, we are in your inbox all day, every day.
You are. And, yeah.
So it's a terrific platform that provides a really important service, you know, frankly, particularly at times like these when communications out from companies to their users or consumers is more important than ever.
Yeah. And I think, you know, communication is at the forefront of everyone's mind right now. And that's a great thing. And consistent communication and reliable communication, that's even better. Samir, you're someone who has been through adversity and you're someone that enjoys talking and discussing it because, you know, you just cited that building SendGrid was a decade long journey. Yeah. And decade long journeys are not the easiest. They're going to be filled with some adversity and dark nights of the soul. So yeah. I would love to get your take on, how do you view adversity and where did that kind of hunger or taste for adversity come from?
Yeah, it's a rich topic area. And I would say, first and foremost, I believe that adversity is at the heart of learning and at the heart of finding an inner well of strength and fortitude that I believe every human has. I really do. I don't think there's anything unique or special to me or other leaders that have found it. I think oftentimes it is because adversity has been thrust upon us, and you realize and you learn of yourself, of the human spirit, that that you can soldier through and push through so much more than one would have thought. And so when once you have done it once, then you always know that that is there. You know that that reserve, that well, exists for when you need to push at an exceptional level. And so in my case, and that was certainly true for us at SendGrid, I would say to all the tech founders and entrepreneurs out there listening, no journey is straight up and to the right. And for all the stories out there that all the decade long overnight success stories, none of these things are easy. And so please don't lose faith in those dark times. They are when you hit those moments of adversity, and we always do in every journey, you find a way to weather through that storm. For me, I think that the source of that experience actually started, had nothing to do with business, happened when I was young. I was a 15-year-old kid when my mom was killed in a burglary. And I found very quickly, it's one of those horrific moments, things you read about in the papers or see on the news. And in this case, it landed at home. And it was a horrific period of time for my family. And some of you may remember your teenage years. They're already drama filled. And you're already in a emotionally sensitized state. And that was one that threw me into a tailspin. And, I was fortunate. I had my older brother in particular was an extraordinary influence in my life. And he's 4 years older than I am, and a great coach and parent for me. And he saw me going off the rails, and there was no mistaking I was going off the rails. I was in a very negative place and angry at the world. And he gave me the pep talk that ended up changing my life, which was a very simple framing of, well, you can let this moment of adversity, which of course sucks, and there'll be nothing that ever happens to us that will be as bad as this. And forever you can, allow the world can look at this moment and say, oh, that's the moment where Samir went off the rails, and it's too bad, he had an otherwise bright future. Or you can harness all of that anger and energy and channel it to go and live a life that your mother would be proud of. And my brother's a world-class marketer. He frames things in a way where there's only one right answer. And it was clear. He said, you know which one your mother would want you to choose. And from that pep talk forward, I put my head down and have worked harder than I ever believed I possibly could. Thankfully, everything has certainly worked out reasonably well. I've had my ups and downs since then too, but I found that weathering through that adversity convinced me that I could get through just about anything. There wasn't any problem or challenge that was going to show up at my doorstep that if I put my shoulder against, I wasn't going to be able to run through.
Thank you so much for sharing that story. That's powerful, to say the least. And your brother sounds like, someone that came, not only was there for, obviously a reason, but was able to frame that in a genius way.
Yeah.
Served in the military and, on two deployments and lost friends, different places, and afterwards to things like suicide. And it's always a challenge, but when you lose a family member or someone close, it hits harder, and it's, horrible, horrible. Samir, when you were receiving that advice from your brother, obviously that's such a pivotal time in your life. You saw those two decision trees, in a sense, branch out. How did you get started on the one that, led up and to the right? And how did you find the strength to keep going? Because that's not, it's still a long journey after that.
Yeah. Like as they always say, every journey begins with that first step. And for me, as a 15-year-old kid, I often joke about, the biggest thing, the hardest thing that I could possibly imagine at that stage in my life was getting into and attending Stanford University. that was this like mythical place that I had always dreamed of wanting to go. I knew that the odds were far stacked against me. I was a pretty good student, but not certainly not the best in my class. And that first step for me, I can remember it vividly, you know, standing over my mom's coffin and saying, "I'm going to get into Stanford University, Mom." And from that day forward, for the next year and a half, it was it happened in the middle of my sophomore summer between my sophomore and junior year in high school. And for those who remember high school, you know, it's junior year and your first semester of your senior year when is sort of the peak of it all. That's when it gets real. And I will often say it's a true statement. I have never worked as hard before or since those 18 months, but it worked. And I was able to, that level of focus on a goal that I was running at that was not in service of myself, but for her memory, I think is in one of the ways in which you find an energy that is deeper than yourself because you're not doing it for yourself. And that focus keeps all the dark thoughts away. You're just focused on the work and you get the work done. And then I was able to make it up here to the Bay Area to, you know, instead of in Menlo Park, I could take out my driver and probably hit a ball towards campus and get pretty close. And things, you know, very much changed from that point forward.
And I'm curious to know for everyone listening that might be going through something that's challenging right now, or, you know, obviously with what's going on a macro scale, it's psychologically challenging for everyone in different ways. Can you describe a little bit of the confidence and new mindset that came after you achieved that goal and after you went outside of your personal suffering to achieve something for someone else?
Yeah. And that, you know, I hope it is something that we can all lean on in this moment. I think it will be very easy over the next set of months to turn inward and think about our own challenges. And everyone has their own, the way they're dealing with this pandemic is hitting people in a myriad of ways. But for those that can, turning outward and whether it's thinking about how you can stay focused to help your family or your loved ones or your community or those most vulnerable, anything that is outside of yourself, I think you will find that it makes coping easier and that it allows you to focus your energies in a way that serves the greater good, that's productive. And the introspection, I think, can, you know, when things are thin or things are particularly bad, I think isn't always as productive as one would like it to be.
For sure. And if we fast forward through your time at Stanford, I'm curious to know, when was the next, you know, major goal, major milestone? What type of things were you setting up after you achieved that challenge? And, you know, you've held a wide set of roles in tech, in executive roles, and as the CEO of places. So I'm curious, what was the journey like to get to those places?
Yeah, it's interesting. After Stanford, I stumbled into software. I graduated and I hadn't studied computer science, though I wish I had in hindsight. but I was more of a business kid. So I studied economics. I did for my bachelor's, I did a master's degree in organizational design, organizational studies, and was really fascinated by business. And so had assumed I would go down a very different career path. But I will often say I just happened to have the sheer dumb luck of graduating from a college that was in the heart of Silicon Valley in the mid-90s. And by virtue of that dumb luck, the number of companies coming to recruit on campus that had something to do with technology was disproportionate to the state and size of the technology industry at that time, which was still young. And software in particular was a relatively young industry to be sure. And so there was a great software company named Trilogy that had come on campus and had a very compelling and charismatic CEO who was a deep believer in hiring great people and great talent. And even if that talent was young, giving them lots of responsibility. And it was a risky venture. You know, at the time, I think the company had about 50 employees and was probably in hindsight, less than 10 million in revenue, I imagine, back in 1994. But I fell in love with the company and the people that were there and decided to take a risk and go and join that software startup. That software startup went on over the next 7 years to go from a sub $10 million startup to a multi-hundred million dollar company employing thousands of people. And it was just a rocket ship ride. And I was really fortunate to have a lot of support within the leadership of the company because I was there early and was willing to do whatever was asked to try to help the company be successful. So I was then able to work in a lot of different areas, a lot of different functions. As the company scaled, there was always a need for, well, there's a big problem or opportunity over there. Can somebody step up and go help us with that? And I got tapped on the shoulder a few times in those situations that all proved to be great learning experiences for me and helped me. I wish I could say it was by design. I would say, you know, in hindsight, it turned out to be just lucky that all of those assignments helped me span, you know, basically all the functions within a software company, short of coding. You know, I got to really learn the business end to end, which teed me up to be able, in my next venture, go ask for and have the opportunity to serve as the CEO of my first startup, back in 2007. But I spent a lot of years just learning. You know, from 95 to 2007 was really, really just a period of learning different parts of the business.
Hey, everybody, we're taking a time out to thank TriNet for sponsoring independent media like Mission Daily. If there's one thing I am about, and in fact, one thing the whole Mission team is about, you know, it's accelerated learning. One way I do that is by learning from the best. When it comes to learning about HR, the team and resources TriNet provides are my go-to source. Just this week, TriNet published a blog and webinar series to help small and medium-sized businesses manage the impact of COVID-19. It covers actions you can take to be prepared should one of your employees test positive for coronavirus. It also covers other factors you should consider, including employee compensation, if your business is required to shut down due to the pandemic. There's lots happening now in real time. Go to TriNet.com and get the information you need to protect your business. TriNet will continue to post the latest as recommendations as legislation is changing on a daily basis. So you joined SendGrid at 2014, right?
That's right. Yep.
And so you joined, and can you kind of paint a picture for us? You did a little bit before, but you know, where was the company at when you joined, and what was your process like for joining? Because, you know, often it's tempting when you join a new venture and do have so much experience, you know, to point out all the changes or the things you think you need to be changed. I'm curious, what was your integration process like back in 2014?
Yeah, joining SendGrid was by far the best career decision I've ever made. I've never had more fun in any job I've ever held. I can say without question, it was also probably the hardest career decision I ever made. So in the summer of 2014, I ended up joining in October. But in the summer of 14, you know, I had kind of made my checklist of things that I really cared about and finding in the next company. And SendGrid kind of checked all the boxes. The problem was that it was, for me, the problem was that I live here in Menlo Park, as we mentioned earlier, in the Bay Area. And SendGrid was founded out of Boulder, Colorado, had expanded to Denver in Colorado, and had the founders of the company had gone and opened an engineering office in Southern California, in Orange County. And you'll note that none of the three that I just mentioned are in the Bay Area. So while I loved everything about this this company, I was living here in the Bay Area and commuting to a different state or a different part of the state seemed kind of crazy, particularly at a time when my wife and I then had relatively young kids. Gosh, they were probably like 8 and 5 at the time, I would imagine. And it seemed particularly stupid. And my wife, who runs intellectual circles around me, was also had a very big job herself at the time, was running business operations over at LinkedIn, and had a team that was probably bigger than all of SendGrid. And she was the breadwinner in our family back in those days. I think she had joined LinkedIn right before the IPO, and which was a wonderful thing. And we were not in any position to be moving anywhere because her job was the anchor of what we were doing. So it was a tough decision to make. I ended up turning the job down twice before I finally accepted it. Part of the reason that I had fallen in love with the company so much was, I often say, I fell in love with SendGrid with head and heart. Analytically, as a business geek, the SendGrid business model to me was astounding. I had been in enterprise software for a decade, or probably 15 years at that point. And the history of enterprise software always involved, you know, writing some complex code to solve a given problem, and then hiring an army of salespeople to go out and knock on doors. And when I came and looked at the SendGrid business, at the time, SendGrid in 2014 was doing about $30 million in revenue. And I asked about what our sales team looked like at the time. And they pointed out the interviewing room window and said, well, that's them over there. And they pointed at a table that had five or six people sitting around it, a card table. I said, that's the entire sales force. They said, yeah, it's all inside sales. They're responding to people that click on the contact sales button on our website. But 99% of our customers never talk to a SendGrid employee before they just try our product for free on our website, embed the API into their code, put a credit card down, and they're off and running. And to me, that self-service, almost e-commerce-like selling of software was magical. So I was in love with that. And I had fallen in love with the company's culture, which at the time when SendGrid was standalone, we called them the four H's: happy, hungry, humble, and honest. And each of those resonated with me in different ways for a particular reason. And I just loved them, particularly the humble H, which I thought was, I'd been humbled by life. I thought that humility was a terrific characteristic, and probably one that was not all that common in software or in tech during that period of time or now. And that resonated deeply with me. And so I had really fallen in love with this company. And so I kept saying no, because of the aforementioned, I live in the wrong place and I've got a young family and these things don't make sense. But I kept thinking about the company because I had really fallen in love with it. And I often retell the story of how it was only because my wife one day, who I mentioned earlier, is much smarter than I am, said to me, you know, honey, you seem to be struggling with this question. Tell me when you want me to tell you the answer. And in the most condescending way that only a loving spouse can. And I said, yeah, honey, go ahead, please. Tell me, what am I missing here? And she said, look, I've known you for 20 years and you have never fallen in love with a company like this. And so you're going to take this job and we're going to make it work. I don't know how, but we'll figure it out together. It was only that extraordinary gesture of love from my wife that is the reason that I was able to take the job, because she gave me permission to do so. And again, I just, you know, for all the listeners out there that are founding companies or going on entrepreneurial journeys, I just encourage you all to remember to thank all those around you who are sacrificing on your behalf to allow you the opportunity to go follow this dream of yours. And my wife in this case was the one who did that for me. And so I ended up taking the job. We ended up agreeing that we'd build out an office here in Silicon Valley, which we did, which at least allowed me to have some nights at home. And we worked out a schedule and a cadence that worked for everybody. And my assistant helped me track how many days and nights I was making it for bedtime and how many dinners I was having with the family. And was pretty maniacal about that, but it was a challenge to be sure. But we did that for it's been 5.5 years now, and it's been quite a journey.
That is exciting and inspiring to say the least. So, I have one son who's two, and two other sons that were recently born. They actually turned a month old today.
Oh, boys. Congratulations! That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, so we launched our first podcast in March of 2018. And so 2 years later, I have three children and I think we have like 11 podcasts now. So perfect timing. And
that's awesome.
And thanks. And one of the challenging things for me is, you know, obviously the early years of children's lives are so important. I mean, the latter years are as well, but the early developmental years, it's so important to be around and provide structure and support. So I'd really selfishly like to get any advice or tips you have for the early days and how you thought about work-life integration between you and your spouse in those early days.
I wish I had a magical answer. There's no two ways about it. It's just hard, particularly if you have two working parents, as we did. You have to make sure you've got a wonderful family or support around you to help during those working hours. And, you know, the cliche of just being present when you are home is so easy to say and so hard in practice to do. The number of times that I know, at least I found myself, on the play mat, on the floor, with one of my toddlers, but my brain would still be cycling on some problem at work or some opportunity we weren't capitalizing on, et cetera. And I would just have to constantly mindfully try to bring my brain back to the moment that I was in with my child. As I say, it's harder than it sounds. It sounds like it should be so easy, but when you feel the responsibility of an entire company, that never turns, it's hard to turn that off. So just really being present is super important. I do love the little tips and tricks of, you come home and you stand outside your door before you cross the threshold for about 30 seconds and take a deep breath and try to shake it all off and then walk in. Or when you get in, you take your cell phone and you put it in the drawer and you say, I'm not going to take this thing out until after dinner, when the kids are already put to bed. And you treasure that time when you can read them those stories in bed or help them with the bedtime routine. And they won't remember any one instance of those nights, but they'll remember that you were present and there. The normalcy and stability that creates for them is what I think persists.
I love that. Yeah. And any type of predictability and quality over quantity is so important. And yeah, it's the small things add up, and just standing outside, that's a great reminder. I'll be sure to practice that today.
Yeah.
Samir, when you are thinking about the future now for yourself, your family, for SendGrid, what is on your radar? Because a lot of people are in a panicked place right now. However, when I talk to other CEOs or executives or more seasoned people, they kind of echoed the similar sentiment that you did, which is this is a crisis, but there's also a tremendous opportunity here. So what type of opportunities do you see, and what type of future are you envisioning for yourself and the company?
Yeah, there's no question that there's a lot of concern and anxiety and fear right now as to what's happening in the world and how that will come home and personally touches and impacts people listening and the people they love and the communities they live in. And as leaders, it's incumbent on us to try to do everything we can to provide stability, to provide a sense of confidence that this too shall pass. And it won't be easy, and it won't likely be short, I'm afraid. But this too shall pass, and it is a one step in front of the other, one day to the next activity to kind of collectively find the strength to move through this. I think in terms of how SendGrid views the opportunity and Twilio, we're fortunate, as I said earlier, that what we provide is a communications platform, and in the midst of a global pandemic, I think people appreciate how critical it is to be able to communicate and communicate at scale effortlessly through services like ours. And so that has been a tremendous, I think, a buoy for many of our teammates who know, feel a sense of pride in what we do, know that it matters. You know, we are powering so many healthcare systems around the world, emergency care response teams. We're powering telemedicine. We're organizations that are relying on us to go do good in the world and help us collectively through the crisis. So that certainly helps. And anything you can do to help your teammates see how what they are doing is connected to fighting this battle that we're in I think is quite helpful. But you know, and as a business, as we look forward, we just think that it increases our resolve and conviction that building this engagement platform is what the world needs. And to date, most of the companies we have worked with have used these channels of communications in isolation, in silos, whether they're using SendGrid for email, Twilio's SMS for text or messaging, or as for voice. They might be using WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger. There are so many different ways in which a company gets their message in front of a consumer or a user, but there really has been very little that orchestrates across them. And I think there is a tremendous opportunity for us to continue to help organizations do that. And I think that's sort of at the center of the vision of Twilio is to build that customer engagement platform. And so I'm very excited to help the team along that journey.
Yeah, it's an exciting time for sure. And again, communications is going to be so paramount as we expand and move into the future here. So with the future at Twilio, I'm curious to know, how did you think about incorporating and kind of melting or alchemizing, or however you want to say it, the company cultures, right? Because you referred to yourself as the chief cultural officer of SendGrid. And then, you know, with the acquisition, Twilio obviously has a different culture. So how did you integrate those four H's, and how did you blend the cultures?
Yeah, it was quite an intentional journey. I mentioned that, after I joined in October of 14, we had a number of challenges at the time that we had to wrestle through, but we were able to place a whole series of bets. Some of them paid off, some of them didn't. Enough of them did that allowed us to re-accelerate our growth rates. And we went from 30 million through 100 million. We took the company public in 2017. That was after Twilio had made its first offer to acquire the company. All of this is in the public filing, so I'm not saying anything that isn't already out there. And at the time, we were very keen to continue to build as a standalone company. We loved our company. We loved our culture. We were very happy to keep on keeping on. And by the summer of 2018, a year into being public, Twilio came back and we revisited the conversation again. It was just clear to me that, and to Jeff Lawson, our founder CEO at Twilio, that we could do so much more together than we could apart, and the synergy between the two businesses was so complementary. Our visions were so aligned, and candidly, we were either going to end up battling each other or coming together as one. And so we ended up making the decision to come together. And in so doing, Jeff and I had a lot of conversations about culture. And I have so much respect for Jeff and admiration for so many different reasons. But one of the maybe chief among them is how much he also cares about culture and the people on his teams. So he asked me a lot of questions about our culture. Not just where we were similar, but where we were different. And we spent a lot of time talking about those differences and how we thought we would navigate those if and when we were one company. And I do believe deeply that when an acquisition occurs, you really do have to become one company. We have a tagline across the organization that is, we have to forge one team. There's no way for everyone is now a Twilion. You have to retire the four H's. We had to retire our self-nomenclature of gridders, is what we call SendGrid employees. They're no longer gridders. We're all Twilions now. And some of those things were hard, but we did them on day one from the time we made the acquisition, or we closed the acquisition. Made it very clear to folks that we needed to bring these teams together. And so I'm so grateful to Jeff and his leadership team. They're very thoughtful. It worked out that Twilio was also in the midst of recrafting its core value set. And they had a list of seven core values and nine leadership principles or something like that. And they realized that, well, that's too many for people to remember. And so they were going to abridge and shorten and consolidate some of theirs. And they were going through that exercise right around the same time as the acquisition. And so in effect, we were able to then go and that the team that was working on that went and interviewed many dozens of what we now call the legacy SendGrid employees, Twilions who were working at SendGrid, and said, you know, how do you think about culture, and tell us more about the 4-H, et cetera, and then incorporated those. And so it was the 4-H's got embedded into the new values, and in the same way as the previous 9 and 7 got rolled in. So it worked out really well that we were able to adopt a whole new set of values together collectively as one company that was neither legacy SendGrid nor legacy Twilio.
Yeah, that's a really, really cool story. I like how you went about that integration there. And if I, from my studying and reading your story a little bit, discovered that, so when you first joined SendGrid, you very proactively sought fundraising. And it seems like, you know, you also proactively sought out the counsel of Jeff and, you know, very thoughtfully pursued that acquisition. So is it safe to say that, you know, you're always thinking 4 years, 5 years, or maybe more years ahead? And if so, how do you go about that balance of living in the present, but also planning and thinking for the future?
Yeah, well, I guess I would say, you know, you're every CEO's job, entrepreneur, founder, is to imagine the world as you anticipate it years out into the future. You really, you know, the things that we do take years to manifest themselves. And so you really have to think about what you think the market landscape might look like years out. In my particular case, I would say much of, you know, for the example you mentioned of, you know, getting together with Jeff, or, you know, years and before we ever talked about anything related to M&A was in fact actually just genuine humility to learn, because I was a new CEO in this new email API developer economy category, where Jeff had founded Twilio and had built it from the ground up and had a company that was probably a year or two ahead of SendGrid in its scale. And so it was a genuine desire to go and learn. And I would encourage all the founder CEOs out there listening to, you know, always be making time to go and learn from others around you that are similar in either the pursuit or the segment or analogous, because you can always learn a ton. And so we did that. But yeah, I think, you know, it is incumbent on every leader to think about, if the world evolved in this way, if the market landscape moved in this way, what would we need to do? And there is no question in my mind early on that SendGrid was either going to end up adding our own SMS and push and in-app capabilities for other communication channels. We'd either be building our own, partnering with somebody else like Twilio, or combining forces with. But it was very clear to me very early that we wanted to have a multi-channel communications platform, that having one channel in isolation was not what the market ultimately would need. And so you just start to work accordingly.
And Samir, now with expanding and having more resources of a larger company, your vantage point is very, very different. And the view that you have of the tech landscape and what's possible is transformed at this point. So if you are providing advice, or if, you know, you're talking to young CEOs or young founders these days who, you know, are in this current situation, what type of advice do you have for them? And is there a maybe one piece of advice you find yourself giving again and again?
Gosh, well, I'll provide maybe one that's specific to the time we're in, and one that's just generic and generically true at any time. For the time we're in, having my first startup that I did from 2007 to 2010, I lived through the Great Recession as a CEO, and I will often repeat for founders, entrepreneurs that are at the brink of this pandemic, don't get burned by your cash burn. That at this stage, making difficult decisions around how you are going to mitigate that cash burn as you're building your business, I think is just really important. There's just, I think, little question that we will be entering a period of significant economic contraction. And being conservative and taking action now will behoove your business down the road. And of course, every business and situation is different. But if you're a young company, a young startup, you're going to need to be able to weather a storm that could be a short storm measured in months. It could be a longer storm measured in quarters. And you just need to look at your balance sheet and figure out what that looks like and make the harder decision sooner than later. You know, I think my more generic advice, which is true independent of time frame, I would say is a simple statement of being authentic and being vulnerable. And the authentic side is there are so many different people out there that will espouse different styles of leadership, different ways to manage. And I'm one of them, by the way. I have a particular style that I love called servant leadership. And I could talk to you for a long time about that, but it's not for everyone. And so I would just encourage every leader that's out there, people resonate with folks that they believe are really them. They're just authentically who they are. And there'll be a self-selection mechanism to be sure. And like will seek like in their leaders and in the cultures that those leaders then create. But I think just being you is really important. And I share that because, you know, when I was coming up, the first leaders that I had grown up under are very different stylistically than I am, but extraordinarily capable, but we're more of a, you know, tops down, I have the answer type leader. I'm not at all that way. I'm definitely more of the wisdom of the crowd. Let me get the group together and collaborate, and collectively we'll come up with a better answer than any one of us will. That is just a very different style. And I think I assumed for years that the only way to be a great leader was to be one way. And it wasn't until, you know, somebody gave me permission in some sense by example, was to just be yourself. And I think you'll be a far more compelling leader if you're just being yourself. Don't try to be or pretend to be anyone other than that. That is, as my mentor at Citrix, extraordinary former CEO there, Mark Templeton, once said to me, he said, "Yeah, Samir, you know, the most powerful thing in the world you can be." And I waited with bated breath, and he said, "Yourself." And that simple truth is. As true today as it was then. The vulnerable side, I think, relates to the authentic, which is, again, in my career, I have found that when people see you as a human, as a full human, that they can identify with, that is not some, you know, in the old 50 years ago, you'd assume that you needed to, the leader had to pretend to be perfect, that had to pretend to be all-knowing and omniscient. And my experience is that people can't identify with that because we are all flawed. We are all human. And when they can't identify with it, their ability to follow, you know, you're more of a figure an idea, a concept. When they see you for who you really are and recognize that you have your own flaws, you have your own insecurities, you have your own challenges, they're just more willing to follow you into battle because they believe in you and they know you're like them, and not just the guy on the screen or the guy on the stage, hopefully the gal on the stage. Right. I would say authentic and vulnerable would be my generic pieces of advice.
I love that. Samir, this has been so awesome. Thank you for being vulnerable, and thank you for being yourself. This is a great interview, and thanks so much for being generous with your time, and best of luck out there in Menlo as we continue to weather the storm.
Thank you so much, Chad. I appreciate it. Thanks to the listenership for listening in, and everyone be safe, be well, and stay healthy.
All right. Take care, everyone. See you next time. By now, you know that Trinet is our sponsor for Mission Daily. You know they have amazing full-service HR solutions for your business. So what are you waiting for? When you go to trinet.com to get more information, you help support independent media like Mission Daily, and you help support our team here. And you, as a business owner or HR exec, can get top-notch service from the team at Trinet. Stop worrying about HR issues and team up with the best, Trinet. You don't have to go at it alone. Reduce your worry. You need a team, and Trinet is your go-to team for HR.